This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 208 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Good, good. And we're back, David. We took last week off. As you know, I was out eclipse chasing, and that required driving about 1,200 miles, and it just wasn't going to come together to do an episode. So apologize to all of you listening. We missed a week, but we're back now.
Yeah, folks, it takes a full solar eclipse to make him stop podcasting for a whole week. It was very impressive. So you don't have to worry about this until April of 2022. So for us to have this problem again.
There you go.
So we got a lot of news stories. We've got, of course, we've got to talk about Hurricane
Harvey.
Harvey. I wanted to say Harry, and that wasn't it. Hurricane Harvey, DJI, and grounding sparks. Border Patrol spots a drone carrying some interesting items. An interesting thought piece about video gamers. And drones replacing police helicopters by 2025. And last but not least, one of our favorite topics, talking about women and their roles in aviation. And we've got some of the women to watch in UASs.
Yes, we do.
So I think we should get started. What do you think?
Yep, let's get started.
For those people who aren't in the United States, I'm sure you've seen the news. We've had a catastrophic hurricane hit our southeastern Texas, the Gulf portion of the state of Texas, specifically the city of Houston. And it's pretty amazing, the disaster that's occurred. But in all of that, we've got a couple of good news stories. Our friend Parker, who's been on the show a couple of times, got a call and is now flying UAVs under a 107 exception down in the area, doing surveying and also flying a NASA ADS-B to support it so that he's not interfering with any other operations, because there's a lot of aviation operations going, a lot of helicopters, both Coast Guard, Navy, Air Force, and Army supporting the rescue reliefs. And of course, surprisingly, but probably not surprisingly, is the FAA is doing a really good job of supporting those people who want to use the drones to help them. Now, they're not letting everybody fly their drones, but they're issuing a lot of exemptions to Part 107s.
They really are. And I think, it, as you say, it's pretty impressive. As of August 31st, the FAA had issued 43 UAS authorizations allowing drone operators to support the response and recovery for this hurricane, and also for use by the media. It's really fantastic to see that the FAA is apparently moving pretty quickly to allow drone operations that make sense. So these authorizations are being issued to mostly to local, state, and federal officials. 8 of the approvals have gone to a railroad company, 5 to oil or energy companies. Local fire department has got an authorization. State environmental quality officials and actually an operator who's supporting a group of insurance companies. And also four media outlets have authorizations to fly drones, which is great. I mean, the first thing we heard was the FAA saying, yeah, it's a no drone zone, want everybody to keep out. Drone Mama's immediate reaction was, yeah, but what about all this, you know, all the good things they could be doing? And it looks like the FAA is taking that into account.
And I'm sure that these these exceptions, these 107s, they seem to be doing the right thing. And these are the pros like Parker, who have done everything and have the training, and they know how to work with the officials and be beneficial. This is a do no harm situation. If you can't help them and all you're doing is getting in the way, don't fly. If you want to apply for an exception and you can justify it, great. I'm sure the FAA will give it. We need all the help we can get. But it's another one of those, don't do any harm. If it means you're flying just to get some funky views, no. Just because we need those helicopters. They're working in 500-foot levels because they're rescuing people off of roofs and cars, etc. You've seen everything from dogs to little babies to senior citizens, and we don't want to endanger any of those, and especially the crews that are already endangering their lives to support them. So my little thing is, I don't normally say this, but if you'd like to help, I know that I would recommend you go to the American Red Cross. The drone operators are supporting the American Red Cross. So that's where, if you'd like to apply some money and help, great. So about that, I guess let's move on to some more positive news, because I have a feeling we'll be talking about Hurricane Harvey for a long time. So our next story is from TheVerge.com. DJI will ground Spark drones on September 1st. We're recording this on the 31st, and September 1st is tomorrow when we release it, unless owners install an update. So what's this all about, Max?
Well, of course, DJI has experienced some problems with the new Spark drone, some of them falling out of the sky. So DJI is pushing out a firmware update to address that problem. And it's a mandatory firmware update. And I'm not sure how they're doing this exactly, but if you don't apply the update, then your Spark won't fly. So if you've got a Spark and you haven't updated the firmware yet, you need to do that. DJI, in its press release, says that the problem with the Spark drones is related to the battery management system and the power supply. Now, again, this wasn't an issue affecting all of the Spark drones, but some number of them anyway. So get your update in there.
It must be semi-pervasive, because they're forcing everybody to update it.
Yeah.
It's a nice drone, but yeah. Though I'm like you, Max. I'm like, okay, if you don't update it, how does it not fly?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just curious about that. But DJI has been being accused of doing some suspicious things, you know, and so it's just it's a very interesting statement. But let's fly safe. We don't want drones falling out of the sky for no reason. So if you have a Spark, update it. Get that firmware update.
And that firmware update does add some other functionality. DJI says that it provides support to fully integrate the Spark with the DJI goggles. It optimizes the palm launch function, they say, for better stability after takeoff. Also improved accuracy of the controls under the quick shot droney mode, as well as enhanced compatibility with the remote controller when syncing up with new firmware updates. So it addresses a number of issues. Sounds like a great update to apply.
Yeah, good for DJI. I mean, if you're going to make a correction, it is kind of nice to get some updates also that are positive, as well as the correcting of the software. So let's talk about your grounded story. Border Patrol spots meth carrying UAV in San Diego. This is from unmannedaerial.com. The Department of Homeland Security's Border Customs and Border Protection has arrested a 25-year-old man for using a consumer drone to transport several pounds of methamphetamine across the Mexican border. So much for our fence. Border agents spotted the drone flying over the border fence. I wonder what the street cost of 25 pounds of methamphetamine is, Max.
Yeah, I have no idea myself personally.
I mean, how many drones can you buy with that? Because that's really all he was doing it for, right? He was going to support his drone habit.
Yeah, of course. Apparently they spotted this drone pretty easily. You know, they found the guy, the drone had been stashed in a bush or something. They found that as well. So I think this young man is in a little bit of trouble right now. Of course, you can't talk about this story without wondering if a wall would have made any difference in a situation like this.
Well, it depends upon how high the wall is.
Like 400 feet? Yeah. You can fly over a wall, so that's what happened here.
Part of me is curious what drone he was using. 25 pounds of methamphetamine is a pretty good payload for a UAV.
Did he carry that much? I thought it was several pounds.
Oh, that's right. He's 25 years old. I'm thinking he delivered 25 pounds of it. Okay. Disregard it, folks. It's Thursday. It's been a long week, and Max made me take off last week, so I've lost it.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, every time technology springs up and there's an advanced technology, I think since the mid-80s, this story fits in just about every time there's a major technology update. And in this case, it's from ifscience.com. Would video gamers make better unmanned aircraft pilots than actual pilots? Is it the same thing? I don't know. It's just, this is always one of those reoccurring conversations you have with high technology.
And the reason it comes up is because of a shortage of drone pilots especially for military applications. So what we have here are some University of Liverpool psychologists, and they conducted a study published in the Journal of Cogent Psychology, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. You can take a look at that if you want. But what they did is they formed up groups, video game players, private pilots, and professional pilots, 15 in each group. So there were 60 participants in the total, most men, 51 males, 9 females. And they gave them a simulated flight with a number of different tasks of kind of increasing complexity and difficulty and stress level. And they kind of observed how well the different groups did. The results are kind of interesting, I think.
Well, let's hear it for the professional pilots, because they were just as good as the video gamers. The private pilots, not so much. Basically, I guess the conclusion is gamers can fly drones because to them it's treated as a video game, which came up as one of my all-time favorite books is Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game. And that whole premise involves little kids flying military spaceships because they're better at it than the adults. Hmm. It's interesting. What do you think, Max? I mean, I've heard this argument that, you know, video game gamers would be better fighter pilots than pilots. I always wonder if it's youth. You know, they always pull these young kids who have nimble minds, and they compare it to a professional pilot who's been flying around for 10 years, 15 years. Is it youth or is it skill? Or, I don't know. We don't want to offend our pilot community, but do they have the ability to function on not necessarily a higher level, but they've trained themselves to be able to absorb data more quickly and process it more quickly? Or is that just youth?
Well, one of the results of the study was that the video gamers retained accuracy to a greater level than the other groups. And then interestingly, they were also, they being the video gamers, were also less overconfident when it came to decision judgments. video gamers and professional pilots showed strong levels of decision confidence. And the report kind of concludes that video gamers could be considered a resource for UAS operation. It's not a conclusive video gamers are just as good or video gamers are better, but that I guess the way I interpret this is you can't rule out video gamers as a source for UAS pilots.
And to dovetail about the UAS shortage of pilots, we should congratulate the United States Air Force because they now have an enlisted female pilot now in the U.S. Air Force who is going to be flying the Global Hawk. Now, we've talked about this before, that the enlisted people will be able to fly the observation UAVs, but not necessarily the armed UAVs, the Predators and Reapers, but they can fly the Global Hawk. So now we have a female in the cadre of enlisted pilots.
About time.
Well, I mean, it was only last year that we got our first enlisted pilots after 50-some-odd years. So the fact that less than a year later that we actually have a female in that group, you got to give it to the military. They tend to integrate a lot quicker than the rest of the universe. So, well, the next story was interesting, I liked. And this is from Defense One. Look for military drones replacing police helicopters by 2025. This is one of those Skynet stories that you wonder, I do find it kind of funny because the whole police helicopter thing came out of a development of a military aircraft called the helicopter. You know, most police helicopters are based on military helicopters. So I'm not sure why this is such a major stretch that they would be operating UAVs. But what do you think, Max?
Oh, yeah. And the defense contractors are looking at this and, you know, they're building these Reapers and Predators for military applications. And they're looking at the market for police helicopters, things of that sort, and saying, why not? You know, why not redesign as necessary and fill that market? General Atomics has actually been investing in a new version of the Reaper. They call it the MQ-9B, which has longer wings and greater range than the military version. So they're actually working towards that. And David, they've actually flown the MQ-9B.
They have. And they actually, I thought this was kind of funny. They actually flew it from General Atomics' private airstrip in Gray Butte, which is just north of Los Angeles. And it required an FAA waiver and a piloted chase plane because the Los Angeles airspace is not what I would call a wide open zone. The MQ-9B is General Atomics trying to gear their military product to the civilian market. I don't think it's going to be that far of a stretch. What'll be interesting is if some of the other radio stations and TV stations start replacing their helicopters for traffic reports with UAVs, that would be really interesting. Hmm. So the Predator and Reaper is designed for long endurance, which you wouldn't be able to get from a helicopter. And the new MQ-9B has got an automatic de-icing system, a Faraday cage to protect electronics because it would be flying in a high electronic area. We don't want the Predators and Reapers to jam everything else, and you want to be able to lock the aircraft in and maintain control, which is really why the Faraday cage.
Of course, there are some obstacles in the way. Regulatory, right? We're not currently set up to allow this kind of operation, especially on a broad scale. So there's some work to be done there. But there are also privacy considerations. You can say, well, what's the difference between, you know, a helicopter flying around up there versus one of these large drones flying around up there? But still, people have kind of a concern, many people do, over privacy issues. especially if we start to see these kinds of drones flying in greater numbers. That's part of the, I think, the plan for these is it's, you can use them more than you use police helicopters now. And so you could do more monitoring and that sort of thing. And, you know, the general public may not appreciate that too much. So there's a few things that need to be addressed before we'll actually see this. And, you know, will we by 2025? Well, I guess we'll find out.
Oh, and if you're worried about privacy concerns, don't watch the opening scene. And helicopters, don't watch the opening scene of Blue Thunder, because that basically sums up the whole privacy argument when they go spying on the young lady in the helicopter patrol because they were bored. So just for side note, but watch Blue Thunder because it's a good movie. But okay. Let's talk about other things to watch, which is, this is from Drone 360 Mag, and they sent this over to us. Their 2017 Women to Watch in UAS. 9 women were chosen for their work disrupting, innovating, and shaping the future UAS industry. And at least one of them where we know and have interacted with.
Yeah, it's a great list. They altogether, they received 110 nominations. 7 different countries were represented, and it's really an impressive group of women. We have Holly Kaysen. She's the COO and CMO, as well as co-founder of Flybrix.
Yay! And for those who don't know, Flybrix is like drones for David, because it's drones that you can make out of Legos.
Out of Legos. Mary Wonrad, she's a civil engineer, a Part 107 operator. She's also president and owner of Wonrad Civil Engineers. They do precision aerial mapping and incorporating UAS data into civil engineering design. Also, Karen Joyce, she's a scientist and senior lecturer at James Cook University. She's co-founder of She Flies, based in Queensland, Australia. And that's focused on drones and STEM education.
Our next one would be Lexi Jansen, first person view drone racer, software developer, and drone certification teacher based in Gdynia, Poland. Natalie Chung, general manager of drone light shows in the UAV group at Intel based at Santa Clara, California. And we know that they got famous because of this year's Super Bowl. Catherine Ball, co-founder of World of Drones Congress, co-founder and chief engineer officer of She Flies, and founder and publisher of the Gumption Trigger, based in Queensland, Australia. Helena Semcio, founder and CEO of Globhe, based in Stockholm, Sweden, and that's a global drone service provider. And from Hogan Lovells, one of our good friends, Gretchen West, who's the executive director of Commercial Drone Alliance, and co-founder of Women of Commercial Drones, based in Menlo Park. And last but not least, Lee LaScaglia, co-founder and CEO of Austral AR, based in Austin, Texas, creating drone piloting systems. My goal is over the next year to have every one of these women on our show.
I like that a lot.
Especially Holly, because I like that whole Flybrix, having my drone minifigs flying. But okay. But no, these are all very really good choices, and hopefully we'll be able to get, hopefully I want all of them on, but we'll get some of them on. There's all really good stories here. So definitely look at this article on our show notes at theuavdigest.com/208.
Yeah, and this was put together by, as you mentioned, Drone 360 Magazine, as well as Women and Drones. And this is the first time they've done this, but they hope to make this an annual list. So we'll look forward to that.
All right. Every so often you get a really cool drone that you got to talk about. This is a really cool drone, and it looks really good. This is from Ianco Design. The title of this was The Dyson of Drones. Now, Dyson meaning the Dyson vacuum cleaner or fan. They make bladeless fans.
Yeah, and so this this drone, which is a design concept, comes from Edgar Herrera, a Mexican designer, and he won the 2017 Red Dot Design Concept Award with this design. So it's very interesting looking. It's got three bladeless air ducts that control direction, and they can each rotate up to 20 degrees. And then it's got a large central duct in the middle of the fuselage, the body, which provides the lift for the most part. It's got four air intake valves that collect air, and then internally the air is accelerated through internal ducts and blades. And the exit point of these looks just like one of those Dyson fans or humidifiers, those devices that seem to magically blow air without any any moving parts that you can see.
And of course, you know, besides our Your Grounded segment and our FAA news, I think we need to have a weekly This Week in Amazon Patent segment. Since it seems like every week we have a new Amazon patent. And this one is from GeekWire. Alexa-enabled Amazon drones will talk to customers delivering packages. Now, the patent doesn't specifically mention Alexa, but I can't imagine that Amazon wouldn't leverage their Alexa technology. And if you don't know what Alexa is your voice-activated helper, you know, can give you recipes or pick your music or dial your friends or if your 10-year-old
you said cook your music.
No, I said pick your music.
Okay.
Alexa was also notorious that overheard a conversation with a 10-year-old and suddenly $1 million worth of toy products showed up at someone's doorstep because they weren't. But I it's very Star Trek-y, sort of the robot shows up at your door and says, "Hi, Mr. Vanderhoof, how are you? This is your package," in a nice female communicative way. What do you think, Max?
Well, there's some other applications that might make sense. Let's say the drone is coming down for a landing on its landing spot to make a delivery, and someone is in the way. You can broadcast a warning to step back. They also contemplate an interaction between the customer, the person receiving the delivery, and Amazon customer support if there's an issue or some conversation that needs to take place. And in this patent, they contemplate both audio, live audio, as well as live video. Here we are again with another patent that it doesn't necessarily mean this will ever come to be, but if anybody has a desire to do this, Amazon or someone else, Amazon will have the patent and therefore be able to charge the royalties for that, which is what motivates probably most patents rather than actually employing them yourself.
We talked about it in a previous episode. We talked about the drone flying in and looking at your yard and realizing you need a new garden gnome. So now we've got Alexa saying, "Oh, by the way, we've noticed that you need a new garden gnome. Shall I put that order in for you, sir?" "Yes, please, Alexa." And the drone flies away. And a couple days later, your drone arrives now with your new garden gnome. Interesting technology. And besides that, in the arguing blimps over blimp bases, you know, now I grew up in North Jersey and we had something called blimpy bases, which were hoagie or sub sandwich shops. So, but now Amazon and who was the other one came up with the blimp base. Somebody else has got a patent for a floating drone launch delivery system based on a blimp
or a
dirigible. So I guess with that, Max, welcome back. I'm glad to see that you didn't stare into the sky. Maybe if you're really good, our listeners, Max will put one of his photographs of the eclipse up on this week's show notes. I personally like the one which is the photograph of the camera with the photograph. That's just my preference. And I will put a picture of something I saw for the first time also this weekend. I didn't go eclipse hunting, but I went to not fear the Reaper. At Dover, Delaware, Dover Air Force Base, the Creech Air Force Base actually brought in a full-size active duty MQ-9 Reaper, which I had never seen before. And it's a lot bigger than I thought. So we'll have a couple shots of that in the show notes also. And with good news that I made a contact with that, and hopefully at some point we'll be able to interview somebody about that aspect of flying, which I was thinking, Max, was kind of ironic because wasn't it the Predator and the Reaper why we started this show in the first place?
That's right.
And now 4 years later, we've come around to where we're going to interview people who fly and work on it. So it's amazing how things come full circle.
And we've also got a short video of that bladeless drone. We'll put that in the show notes. You can watch the video right from the show notes, which you can find at the UAVDigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes, that's the UAVDigest.com/208.
And of course, if you want to be part of our social media experience, we'd love for you to become part of our Slack listener team. They've gotten into some really interesting conversations. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com with your email address, and we'll send you an invite. Our high-powered users are all there, and they get a kick out of talking about all sorts of aspects. You can also find us on Twitter at UAVDigest, on Facebook.com/theuavdigest. I have been posting Parker's Facebook posts about flying and the disaster in Houston and the support there and what's going on there with the UAVs on our Facebook page. So reach out to there and you'll see what's going on in Houston. You can always email us either Max or David at theuavdigest.com or feedback@theuavdigest.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And of course, you can become a patron of the show. And last but not least, we'd like to thank our sponsors. And it's less than a month away, Max, that I will be at the big drone show in Toronto. I still haven't heard a lot from our listeners, with the exception of our friend Ken, who was actually one of the presenters. So if you're going to be in the Toronto area the last week in September, give me a shout out. I look forward to covering the show and making a lot of new contacts, but I'd also like to meet our listeners. So I guess with that, I'll wrap this up and say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.